T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
As we celebrate White Sox announcer Ed Farmer, it's our pleasure to bring in the company of a Sox fan who's on my Mount Rushmore of Chicago rockers, the co-founder of Styx. Dennis DeYoung is joining us.
As for my collection of Styx albums, I leave that to no one because that's who appreciated Styx as much as me.
Having known Ed as long as 40 years, there was no more supporter and lover of this city than Ed Farmer. A Southside guy for sure. Every time we talked, which was often, he started the conversation by saying, Dennis, can you believe how far we come, two kids from the Southside?
I learned how to play catch in the neighborhood, 79th of Francisco.
Which Styx song would have best fit his personality and his demeanor?
I would have said it's The Animals, the old blues song. You know I'm mad! Because he came out mad. He was like an intense guy as a competitor. Styx song? You're certainly not Babe.
Oh my God! Styx! I love Styx!
Yeah, I love Renegade. Hated Babe.
I'm thinking maybe Renegade, which I believe the Pittsburgh Steelers still come out of the tunnel to.
They do, but I don't think he was a Renegade. Maybe Blue Collar Man.
There you go.
Well, I got a tribute for Ed, if you're listening. Eddie, when you're with me, we're smiling. How about that one, Danny? Just made that up.
Awesome. That is so awesome. Dennis, you're so cool for picking up the phone.
And he taught me that Styx was one of the greatest American rock bands. And they only caught a bad rap because most critics are cynical.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Happy Scorantine, day 10. Day 9 was one for the memoirs. We're here, McNeil and Parkins, Tanny, Shep, Herb Lawrence helping out. The whole mob is assembled. Dan McNeil, how you doing today?
It's a sunny day where I am, Danny. Making the best of bad stuff to the best of our abilities. If I appear to be out of breath, it's because I'm out of breath. Wow.
What happened?
I was a photo finish to get here on time. I apologize for that. I know you're breathing because I can hear you in that cell, fat ass. Whoa. At the wire. I misplaced my phone. I went to a farm pond to see a buddy. We fished across the pond from one another for an hour and 20 minutes. He beat me 5-2. I thumped him 12-2 Saturday, so he wanted a pound of flesh. And I couldn't find my cell, so I was, and I always have the ringer off, foolishly. I guess not foolishly. It would not be good to hear Led Zeppelin in the middle of one of our fine on-air conversations. Although it's a good song. It's Misty Mountain Hop, as you know from their fourth album, a veritable greatest hits record, Danny. But I couldn't find the damn phone, and finally I found it, and I am at the wire. So, at your service here, because we have lots of sports news, and yeah, for the memoirs yesterday, indeed, it was a wild ride yesterday. It was a day where the score served a purpose to give people a place to express and hear people express their fondness for a Chicago treasure, Ed Farmer, and it was therapeutic for me, and I appreciate you and Tanny and Shep, all of the contributions of the guys on the show and all of our listeners who expressed such what I thought was very sincere gratitude for whatever role we could have played in your day to ease the pain. Even though you might not have known Ed personally, you feel like you do. We talked about that quite a bit yesterday, how intimate the relationship is between those who do baseball on the radio and the audience, or the radio, period. And I felt a real connection to everybody we talked to yesterday about it, and it helped me process it because I hurt more than I was expecting to hurt yesterday when we got started. I did not anticipate that, and I think it's a credit to our sound man, Chris Tannehill, who loved Ed. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And the way he wove together so many wonderful moments in Sox history over the last 20 years really, really tugged at my heartstrings. And it was a good day despite it being such a horrible day, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it was a horrible day, and not just because of Ed Farmer and not just because of COVID-19, but as we addressed yesterday on the air, a lot of shows I know have been addressing it in their shows today. But, you know, we talked about our teammates yesterday on the show, Connor McKnight, Julie DeCaro, Rick Camp, David Schuster, and it goes beyond that. The other Entercom stations, our sales department, our promotions department, the pay cuts across the company. These are terrible times. It is affecting everyone. It has come close to home, and it has come close to people that we love and work with. And it was an awful, awful, awful day. And a feeling of normalcy is one that I try to cling to between 2 and 6 as therapy, both if we're laughing, hopefully you're laughing, but know that we're doing these shows. We did it yesterday and today and going forward with, you know, honestly, heavy hearts for our colleagues who were more drastically impacted than we were. And I'll just say we are still a SCORE family. We might be a dysfunctional family at times, but we are a SCORE family. And the SCORE was never about a company or a boss or a stock price or a furlough. The SCORE is about the people who are at the SCORE. And attitude reflects leadership, Captain. And so I would say that Dan Bernstein, who has been the face of this station for a long, long time, his words today at 9 o'clock, that is the soul of this family, of this radio station. And we are led by our leader, Mitch Rosen, who has been great throughout awful, awful times and will continue to be. And so we are hurting. We are a splintered family, but we are still a family, despite some evidence to the contrary. And we're going to be here talking sports and being a diversion and being real and being honest and being raw with all of you. And, Mac, I got to say,
yeah,
feels kind of good to have some actual bona fide local sports news.
Well, We do, but we're going to have to wait to get our teeth on the meat that's on that bone if, in fact, this sports news comes to be reality. Where do you want to start? John Paxson being stripped from power with the Bulls, or a legitimate quarterback competition, which Matt Nagy is promising us today?
Hey, man, flip a coin, because these are, honestly, these are legitimately great stories that I'm happy to be able to share with the listeners. Like, wherever you are, whether you're working, whether you're not, whether you're at a job, whether you're at home, I'm at home, Tanny's in the studio, Herb's in the studio, Max at home, Shep's at home, but we are all in this together. And I love it. Like, I'm not surprised that it's an open competition with Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky. I am a little surprised, even though there have been reports by Casey Johnson and Joe Cowley that the Bulls were going to move on from John Paxson. But whenever sports resume, Mac, even if it doesn't happen until 2021, the Bears might have a new quarterback. The Bulls will have someone new in charge. The White Sox will have optimism. It feels like hope is springing eternal for all of our teams, you know, except the Cubs.
I get that. Yeah, I felt similarly with both pieces of news, but I'm a little bit more guarded in my optimism regarding the Bulls. Let me start with the Bears first. What Matt Nagy said today, what is exactly what I think most of us wanted to hear, You probably are not among those who want to see both of those guys play in August, but that's what he talked about today, and it turned me on, because that's the only way to solve the issue. That's the only way to find out which guy is the better man for the job once you start playing football that matters in September. You have to see them against the best the other team has. They both have to get chances against the first team D in these preseason games, and it sucks to have to risk injury. But we're not talking about Hall of Fame talent here. We're talking about two guys who just have to be above average with their defense to be good enough in their minds to get them in a position maybe to get to a Super Bowl. So you got to play them in August, and I am heartened by the idea of both Trubisky and Foles taking snaps in preseason games. That made my day. Sports.
Yeah, you know, listen, you know how I feel about the risk of preseason with injuries, but when you have a legitimate competition for your starter, it does change things. Now, I still think it's going to be limited, and I still think that this is mostly lip service from the Bears. Actions over words. They're not going to say that Mitch is demoted, but they are not committing to picking up that fifth-year deal. They traded a draft pick for Nick Foles. They restructured the contract for Nick Foles. There are a bunch of incentives in there for Nick Foles. So they've promised an equal number of snaps in training camp between Trubisky and Foles. I said it in January. I thought there was going to be a new starter. I said it when they traded for Foles. I think that Foles is going to be the starter, and I'll say it again today, now that they said it's an open competition. I expect week one of the NFL season, whenever it happens, Nick Foles to be the starting quarterback for the Bears. Matt Nagy has given up on Mitch Trubisky.
I'm not saying that's correct. Yeah,
I don't think that Ryan Pace necessarily has, but I think the coach of the Bears has given up on the quarterback that he inherited of the Bears, and he went out and got a guy. He called it the biggest move of the offseason, but it's not financially. Robert Quinn is. But when you go out and get a quarterback and you call it the biggest move of your offseason, the main acquisition, I think is how it was referred to. You don't call the backup quarterback the main acquisition. Like, this is Nick Foles is going to be the starter for the Bears. I'm very confident in that.
You know what? I'm going to admit something that I might be just so eager to salivate on something sports wise that I'm doing a little bit of maybe tinfoil hat connect the dots math here. But listening to both sound bites today, listening to all of the sound bites from both Nagy and Pace today, I got the impression in Matt Nagy's mind, he's behind the wheel of the automobile for the first time, that he is going to be the guy who is going to make the decision on who's going to quarterback this football team. And when he talked about his assistant coaches he brought in, who he feels good about, with whom Nick Foles has a history, and John DeFilippo, he was just gushing about that. And I think he feels like, to a large degree, he's won this offseason, and that the general manager is not going to impede his desire to move on from a guy they traded up for 4 years ago who they shouldn't have done that for. I think it's his team. That I don't know if you think that's overstating it, but listening to him today, I heard relief in his voice that there's something other than Mitch Trubisky. I'm going to meet him in training camp whenever that happens. I felt an enormous weight lifted off of his shoulders listening to him talk.
What we're trying to do is what's best for the Chicago Bears, plain and simple. That's what it comes down to. And so, like I was saying, Ryan and I have had great talks with both of them. What's important and what y'all are going to find out in this process is going to be real simple. It's going to be very transparent and very honest. What I thought was really neat when we just talked to Mitch, which speaks to who he is you could feel how much of a competitor, and you know it and you see it. He's a competitor now. He's embracing it and excited to get back to work. You know, with that said, part of the conversation that you know, we discussed too was understanding here the big picture. Is I know that Mitch gets a lot of this, but, you know, we could have been a lot better coaching schematically, and I could have been a better head coach. And then we all, as we all know, you know, we can always be better players around them as well.
I think it's what they have to say right now. You know how I feel about actions and words, actions over words, and when football people speak, take it with a grain of salt. I'm very confident, like I said, that Foles is the starter. And I know for many people, anybody but Mitch is a reason to jump for joy. You should remember that Nick Foles lost his job to Gardner Minshew, a sixth-round pick in Jacksonville.
Yes.
I'm not here saying that Nick Foles is necessarily the savior. I do think he's an upgrade over Mitch Trubisky. But we've talked about how Ryan Pace has gotten an A on the defensive side of the ball, and he gets like a D-plus on the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
This is a Matt Nagy move. This is Matt Nagy taking control of his offense for better or for worse and choosing the option that was best available for him.
I have to remind myself of how Nick Foles is not a messiah as well. It's easy to do, it's not easy to do just because his name's not Trubisky. It's easy to just think of him as the guy who was a Super Bowl MVP and beat Tom Brady in the New England Patriots a couple years ago. But the fact of the matter is, you're right. He lost to a no-name, a virtual unknown last year. He lost his job, and his numbers historically during the regular season have been very Trubiskian. They are almost identical in quarterback rating over their career. They've got a lot of similarities in their numbers. This is not on paper a ridiculously tremendous upgrade. But you know what the guy does have? He's got skins on the wall, and he's won playoff games, and he did it in this system. So, yes, anybody but Mitch works. Now, for the other side, for the other big story of the day, anybody but John works, whether it's a front office dude with the Raptors or somebody who's coming from Denver. But if John Paxson ultimately winds up in some sort of position where he still has swing, it's merely window dressing. What John Paxson needs on his business card, Danny, is the title ambassador, so he can shake hands and kiss babies and do all those things, do appearances, do radio interviews, and be the face of the organization and have nothing to do with the daily operations. If they extract him from that, then I will believe that's a sincere move in an appropriate direction. But when I hear talk of them hiring somebody to do the basketball things, but Pax is still going to have some sort of voice in it, that scares me.
I will take it because they're saying advisory role, and Adrian Wojnarowski is framing it as top executive. Listen, Rick Hahn is the top executive now for the White Sox. Kenny Williams is still there. Rick Hahn is executing a nice rebuild. Is it perfect? No. Is it how I would want the organization to be run? Absolutely not. But we know that that's not how the Reinsdorf organizations run their sports side of the franchise. Like, it's not. So as long as the buck doesn't stop with Pax anymore, there is a chance to clean house and have a fresh start and start rebuilding your reputation within the league. Gar Forman can be pushed aside, even more so than he already has been. He's a glorified scout at this point. Jim Boylan can be jettisoned. You can hire a competent coach. You can go outside of the 90s Bulls circle of trust. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can actually start to get fresh perspective and fresh eyes on this situation.
Yeah.
And whether it's a guy from Denver, Miami, Toronto, we'll see. We'll see who it is, and then we'll vet the candidate once he actually gets here. But as long as final coaching power, final drafting power, final scouting power, final international allocation of budget, as long as all of those decisions, the presentation for a free agent recruitment pitch, as long as all of those things, final say, is with someone other than John Paxson, it's a good day for the Bulls.
Okay. All right.
You know, like,
let me ask you this.
Is it a perfect day? Is it a perfect day? Maybe not, but it's a good day.
I hope so. And I look forward to the conversations along the way today. Can you speak intelligently about any of these guys who are being mentioned? Do you have a dog in this fight?
I don't yet. I will admit that I have not fully vetted myself and done all of my research on all of the guys that are there. Like, when you see these names, right? So Denver, an up-and-coming organization that has drafted very well, that has not built their team through free agency.
Toronto, an organization that by and large has not built their team through free agency. Miami, they're Miami has at times built their team through free agency, but Pat Riley has done a masterful job of continuously hitting on draft picks and going from the Shaq era to the Wade era to the LeBron era to the Jimmy Butler era. Like the Heat have never torn it down and rebuilt it up. So the names are basically a lot of number twos from really good organizations, the majority of which have built whatever success they've attained through the draft. Would I love it if they were going to say, we're going to go out and make Sam Presti from Oklahoma City an $80 million crazy offer over 10 years or something like that? And, you know, Masai Ujiri, like one of the top three or four basketball executives in the game, and try to pry one of those guys away from an organization? Yeah, I'd love that. But don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right? Like, this is progress. Like, moving away from John Paxson and putting a new voice in charge after 19 years and having the buck stop with someone new is a good thing. And then we can worry about exactly who that person is once they're installed. At least that's how I'm operating as a Bulls fan.
So you don't think Kenny Williams still has the ability to swing something with the White Sox? You think it's 100% Rick Hahn's team?
No, I don't think it's 100%.
See, that's my fear here. That's what I dig. And Kenny comes out every 18 months or so to remind us of just how big his White Sox wang is. So I just don't want the same thing happening with the Bulls. If you're going to make the change, do it. Don't half do it. Don't three quarters do it. Get him out of there. Save his life for him, for Christ's sake.
It's just not how they do it. You know, so I'm with you. Do I want to have the conversation through the lens of a utopic world if I'm pulling the strings and running the show? Or do I want to do it through the lens of reality? Mac, I was skeptical that they were ever going to get here.
Yeah.
That they would be like, hey, we're making money. We're generally speaking drafting pretty well for our position.
Right.
Eventually we'll get lucky again with Derrick Rose, and let's wait it out through 2021. We've been injured. We don't want to buy out another coach. Like, until that tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski today, that's where my money would have been, despite Cap and Casey Johnson and Joe Cowley talking to the contrary. And that's no disrespect to any of those guys.
Yeah.
It just is how ingrained I feel like the 90s Bulls culture is, and the loyalty culture within the Reinsdorf organization.
Okay, we'll talk about that throughout the course of today's show, on the air until 6 o'clock tonight. We'll toggle between the Bulls' potential changes and the open competition, the Bears brass, as they come down from up on high today. They descend from Lake Forest via teleconference to answer questions, and it's gonna be a sportsier day than we've been used to. I think we're up for the task. We also got a real sad rock and roll death. Bill Withers is gone, Danny, and I know you want to pay tribute to him at least once throughout the course of today's ride. And we may wander to a little baseball as well. What all we got coming up on the docket today, man at the main mic?
We've got John Morosi. We've got a Score Stories montage. We will talk rock and roll, like you said, two legitimate, beefy, meaty sports topics. And we flippantly said we were going to support a really stupid cause on our Train to Nowhere as the show of the stupid and futile gesture. And apparently Shep has a little surprise for us in that vein coming up at 3:45. But we're going to do our best to give you some normalcy on a feel-good Fast Friday. But the heavy hearts that we're broadcasting with, and that we're dealing with the reality of the world around us, we continue to do the public service and inform with the daily COVID-19 update from Governor Pritzker next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
On the score.
Look, we are not all in the same boat. And when celebrities and rich people say that, I want to smack them. Some of us have nicer boats. Let's be honest.
Amen. Amen. Nothing has driven me crazier during these times. Actually, that's not true. A lot's driven me crazy during this crisis. Like willful misinformation of the public about matters of global health. But one of the other things is what people are like, man, we're all in this together, and it's affecting all of us. Man, yeah, it is, but it's affecting others the same way. If you lost $1 million in the stock market, that sucks. But you had $1 million to lose in the stock market. This is affecting people on a level that is much more serious and, in many cases, literally life or death. So I thought that was awesome from Dennis DeYoung yesterday.
Dennis DeYoung, the co-founder of Styx, wanted to call yesterday. We're so glad he did. It was a pinch-me moment for me during all this craziness. He wanted to talk about his pal, Ed Farmer, with whom he was very, very close, and we're so very lucky he did. It was a surprise call. You don't get those all the time. In times of crisis, some people want to say some things, and it was great that he was listening. Longtime score guy. I'm so glad he called. And to call out fellow celebrities, yeah, stop saying we're all in the same boat. We got a bigger boat, Chief. That's cool that he would acknowledge that. And really an odd day yesterday, a day that was, you know, sad on so many levels and yet satisfying on so many other. But that was one of my favorite surprise calls I've had from somebody over these years. I remember once Walter Payton once called us on his own.
That's
and
pretty
said,
cool.
Yeah, and said, you know what? You guys need to lighten up on Mike. Mike's doing the best he can. Mike being Jordan. He thought the, you know, callers, host of the station had been too tough on Jordan, and he called on his behalf. That was kind of neat. But it was
Where
it was,
were you when you heard the big news, Wally?
Wally.
Don't call me Wally.
Don't call me Wally. He is soaping up and singing.
By the way, speaking of a take that aged well, you guys were being a little too hard on Michael Jordan, so Walter Payton called in.
God.
Right?
That is just sports radio in a nutshell. I'm going for the biggest, baddest player on the team and saying he's not good enough. Oh, yeah, who are you criticizing? Michael Jordan.
I know. Whoever called you out of just to defend somebody? I'm sure you've had this happen to you.
My favorite one is Boeheim. Boeheim is a Hall of Famer. He's a legend. And in Syracuse, New York, there is like no one that even is within 1/100th of his popularity Q rating. Mm-hmm. But man, he's thin-skinned and insecure. And if he ever gets criticized by local media, he mm-hmm. goes so hard at it because he feels entitled to good coverage.
Right.
And he called in to my post-game show multiple times. But I remember my favorite one, I was questioning why he didn't name a point guard between Brandon Trish and Scoop Jardine. I thought it was, I was like, you're just creating confusion and you need to have a point guard. And like, point guard's like the quarterback of the team. Uh-huh. And Boeheim calls in and he goes, Danny, when they're not pressing, you could bring the ball over half court. It doesn't matter who the point guard is. They're both capable of dribbling the ball across half court.
That's great. You know, your descriptions of him have changed my perception of him completely. because never having spent any time around him, the perception of him always in the Midwest, at least from people I've listened to who covered college basketball, nobody more so than Terry Bors, was that he was Captain Puttstake, that he was just the biggest jag and was always uncool to everybody. But the fact that he has a respect for what the sports broadcasting and sports journalism departments do at his university and gives those kids access but expects them to be at the same level that he gets from his Division I athletes, that's pretty cool. I have a new perspective on Jim Boeheim, who I, for 25 years, have thought was a complete jag.
Yeah, and he's got some curmudgeon-y, jaggish tendencies because he thinks he walks on water like a lot of coaches. So I'm not painting him
jaggish.
I love jaggish. It's not bad, right? Yeah.
Jaggishian. Let's go both of them. Jaggishian.
Sure. He can have his jaggish days. But yeah, he knows that other than his basketball program, the thing that brings the most amount of acclaim and prestige to that university is its journalism program. So he gives the students full access. And he treats them like they are professionals because he believes if you're working at the best student media and best student journalism school in the country, then right. He's going to hold you to high esteem. And honestly, when I was a student, he probably taught me more than just about any journalism professor, because if you were going to step up and ask him a press conference question, you better come correct with it. So yeah, he was a good dude in that regard. And, you know, like I said, he's got his flaws. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. But but I just for a guy to call in like that, I was like, man, Jim, why do you care? Like, I'm broadcasting on a small radio station in Syracuse, New York. I'm 23 years old, making $9 an hour, graduated from school 10 months ago.
Yeah.
You know exactly who I am. Why do you care about my opinion? But he really did. He would care, and he would go after the beat writers and the whole thing. But I can't top Walter Payton. I just can't do it.
Well, that's good, though. That's good. You know what? You're still navigating your way through the waters. Look, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to. But I want to extend you an invitation sometime during the 3 o'clock hour, maybe. A bunch of texters have chimed in and are looking for more, and where some confusion, it appears, exists regarding comments made about Score family and news that hit us all very hard yesterday. I did not hear some of the comments that were made by our colleagues earlier today that apparently were not in line with something you said as soon as we got started. So I will invite you to walk out on the ledge if you so desire and comment further a little bit down the line. You think about that, Danny, if you'd like to. But I'm game if you want to do that. But again, I come in, you know, uneducated on it because I was not listening to the radio station earlier.
Listen,
today.
I'm always willing to be transparent. I feel like what I said earlier is pretty self-explanatory, but I'm happy to get into it more directly if anybody would like to. That's totally fine. Just know it's tough, man. It's tough for everyone, and it is toughest for those who lost their job, but it is actually tougher for people who are sick and dying and dealing with not being able to be there for their loved ones, like Dan said earlier today. So
yes,
it is a, you know, these are extraordinary times. These are extraordinary circumstances, and the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, is about to address the latest.
Guard, the Army Corps of Engineers, and a host of tradespeople are setting up the largest of our alternate care facilities to support our response to COVID-19. I'm here with the City of Chicago's Mayor Lori Lightfoot, with Deputy Chief of Engineers and Deputy Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Major General Robert F. Whittle, and Dr. Nick Turkel, former president and CEO of Advocate Aurora Health, and now the executive director of the McCormick Place Alternate Care Site. Folks, I want to share with you just how important this day is for Chicago and for the state of Illinois. 5 short days ago, this was an empty convention hall. There was truly nothing here. Throughout this week, I have tracked the progress of this build-out, and I want you to know that I'm genuinely blown away by what's happened here. We've all been through a range of emotions together these past several weeks as we've battled COVID-19, but when I walked into this building and saw how it was transformed in just 5 days, I was truly flooded with an overwhelming sense of pride and patriotism. The teams on the ground here have brought everything to the table for Illinois. In less than a week's time, they've assembled 500 rooms and beds, 14 nursing stations, and full support rooms for supply storage, pharmacy needs, and housekeeping. In 1 week's time, the heroes who came together to make this possible built us a facility larger than the largest hospital in Illinois. 1 week, and they will be building out to 3,000 beds before the end of the month. This, folks, this is Illinois. I'm not sure I can fully express the extent of my gratitude to the many individuals who made this happen. I want to thank the Army Corps of Engineers, the Illinois National Guard, FEMA, and the hardworking union tradespeople. And I'm going to list all of them because they all deserve recognition. Electricians and plumbers, carpenters and pipe fitters, teamsters, telecommunications, laborers, operating engineers, decorators, sheet metal workers, iron workers, and finishers. Monumental, round-the-clock dedication is what got this done before we need it, preparing for saving lives in the event that things become as bad as some have predicted. Really, to all of you who are tuning in today from across the state, you should be so very, very proud of what's happened here, and they're continuing their work. We've also launched work on 3 other sites in Chicago and the Collar Counties, the former Advocate Sherman Hospital campus in Elgin, the Metro South Health Center in Blue Island, and Westlake Hospital in Cook County's Melrose Park. And today, I am proud to share with you our next site, Vibra Hospital in Springfield, Illinois, which will begin to add more beds to our capacity in central Illinois. I want to take a moment to walk you through the why behind these facilities. As incredible as the work that's been done here is, it's also profoundly sobering. This is a facility that we stood up because the human population is susceptible to this virus at a scale never before seen in our lifetimes. And it very well might be that this virus overwhelms our existing hospital capacity in Illinois, as it has done in Italy and other countries around the world, and as it's beginning to do in other parts of our country, too, in places like New York and Boston and Detroit and New Orleans. We're already seeing this very real scenario take place. As a point of reference, on March 24th, we here in Illinois had about 26,000 non-ICU beds, 2,600 ICU beds across the state. Every day since, we've added beds and equipment at our existing hospitals to increase capacity. Even with those efforts, of our now nearly 28,000 beds in the state, only 11,500, or 41%, are currently available. That's a lot fewer than is normal for this time of year. Even more striking, of the approximately 2,680 ICU beds in this state, just slightly over 800 are available. That's just 29%. And that availability is diminishing as COVID-19's presence continues to grow. Since yesterday's update, Illinois added 1,209 cases. COVID-19's reach now stretches to 64 of our 102 counties. In the last 24 hours, 53 Illinoisans lost their lives fighting COVID-19. Bringing the total number of Illinoisans who have passed away because of this virus to 210. That's 210 fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, grandparents and children who are no longer with us. May their memories be for a blessing. They are the impetus for us. As we prepare this facility at McCormick and the other alternate care facilities around the state, because I never want to get to a place where our families or our friends don't have a place to heal, or where our hospitals don't have the capacity to give them the best chance possible to beat COVID-19. Preparing also means proactively assembling the healthcare workers who will bring these facilities to life. A hospital bed is just a bed until it has the staff and equipment to turn it into a place to treat COVID-19. We've already assembled the medical personnel who will staff these first 500 beds, nearly 140 healthcare heroes from around Illinois and the nation are ready to work here, and we'll be adding many hundreds more as the need evolves. Before I turn it over to Mayor Lightfoot, I want to address one final topic. Over the last few days, we've seen information start to trickle out from the White House and the CDC about whether or not the general public should be wearing masks. So let me go ahead and tell you where I see the science trending. Epidemiologists and infectious disease experts are still studying how COVID-19 travels through the air between people, and particularly how it travels from people who are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. That research is still evolving, and it'll continue to evolve. Nevertheless, here's what I think, and it's based on what the experts seem to be saying. There's a reason that we're raised to cover your mouth or use your elbow when you cough or sneeze. It's a simple gesture to reduce the number of germs that you spread to those around you. The doctors all agree that this virus can be spread through droplets, like when you sneeze or cough. So blocking that by wearing a mask in public seems like a common sense way to do what's right for everyone around you. The most important thing you can do, frankly, is stay home. But when you do go outside, or when you must go to the grocery store or pharmacy, wearing something to cover your face is a good idea, based upon what the science says. Maybe it's a homemade fabric mask, or maybe it's a manufactured general medical mask, really just something to cover your nose and mouth out of courtesy to those around you, in case you're one of those who are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic and who could be spreading the virus. Wearing a mask is just one more way that we can help take care of one another in our state. So thank you, and now I'm pleased to turn it over to someone who's been such a terrific partner, not just in building out this facility and manning it, but also in all things that we've worked on with regard to COVID-19 in the city of Chicago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker with the update. Anything in particular of note from Mayor Lightfoot, we will pass along. But you got your daily COVID-19 update. 1,209 new cases, 64 of 102 counties across the state of Illinois, 53 deaths since yesterday's update, 210 total across the state. And he was doing that briefing from McCormick Place, right, Tanny? That's where he was at the,
correct,
at the beginning,
yeah,
of that?
He was touring the facility for the first few minutes there. That's why we got to him a little late.
Yeah, no problem. But so the reason for that is they are talking about where they are with ICU beds, saying that there are 29% available right now across the state with the number of cases growing. So it's a race right now to expand hospital beds. And he's saying they're not just beds, right? You have to have them staffed with the necessary equipment, things like ventilators, and then people who can work the equipment, and nurses and doctors to care for the patients. And so that's what flattening the curve is, right? Practice social distancing so that we can spread out the number of cases over a longer period of time so it doesn't spike and overwhelm the local healthcare system. So there's your update from Governor Pritzker. Obviously not a very encouraging one.
No, it's not. And as I look outside, it's sunny out and the temperature is in the upper 60s. And just as we experienced last weekend, just to be smart, just, you know, I hate to be preachy, but we all got to remind ourselves that warm weather shouldn't tempt us to do things that we've been told are bad. and social gatherings are not a good idea. They're a terrible idea right now. And just because it's nice doesn't mean you should plan a get together. If you know, and I'm hurting too. We're all hurting during this thing. We're all missing people. I haven't seen two of my three sons in 3 weeks, and I hate it. But the warm weather is not reason enough to take a departure from what we've been practicing pretty diligently for about 3 weeks now. So let's keep grinding it out, man.
Got to keep grinding it out. It is selfish to disobey those orders. That's what it is.
It is.
It's straight up selfish. You are putting your own personal enjoyment over the health of someone who is less healthy than you and our healthcare workers. All you got to do is read the Tribune or watch the local news. They are profiling the local Chicagoans and Illinois residents who are dying of this, how they are dying. They are talking to local healthcare workers about the grind that they are going over each and every day. So, you know, I'm with you, man. Trust me. I want to golf. I want to show off my baby. I want my parents to be able to hold their grandkid. Like, trust me, we all have the things that are, it's inconveniencing us, but we are privileged to be working, to have insurance, to be healthy. And the better we do this, the quicker we can return to some semblance of normalcy, right?
Well, Owen born? 7 weeks ago today? 8 weeks?
More than that. So January 17th. So we're
at... Noah's on a Friday afternoon. So you're at 10 weeks now?
Yeah, 10 weeks. Yeah. And he's...
A happy story. Tell our listeners a happy story about something that happened since we left our show last night at 6 o'clock where you bonded with your son. Warm our hearts, Danny Parkins.
Well, listen, I mean, a couple of things. He's crossed the 10-pound barrier, which is just awesome for a premature baby. So much of it is about growth, and, like, he's got chunky cheeks, you know? Like, the goal, you know, you want to have, like, a fat baby so that he's a healthy baby.
Every baby is supposed to look like Don Zimmer.
Exactly. So, like, when we send pictures to people, and they're like, oh, my God, like, who's that baby? What's he storing in those cheeks? Like, Steph and I just glow because he doesn't look so small anymore. And then, you know, he still loves, like all babies do, I presume, like the skin-to-skin contact. So when I usually do the first feed of the night. So if he wakes up this past night, it was 2:30, 3 in the morning. And then he'll sleep for another 3-4 hours, and Steph will do the 7 a.m. feed. And then when she's, you know, baby pumping or doing something else out there, she'll bring him in to me, and she'll have him sleep on me when I'm, like, still in bed without my shirt on. And so he'll just, like, sleep on my chest, and he falls, like, off to the side. He doesn't sleep vertically up and down my chest. He'll sleep kind of sideways. Yeah. And it's like he's, like, sleeping in my little, like, the little nook, like, you know what I mean? Like, in my little shoulder. And, like, I don't have big shoulders, so, like, I was never, like, the comfortable guy to sleep on with, like, a wife or a girlfriend. They'd be like, ah, you're too bony. Your bony shoulder, your bony chest, your bony elbow. But, like, he's perfect. Like, I finally have, like, I feel like a big burly man compared to this 10-pound little guy, and he could just kind of, like, sleep in the nook right there. And so he slept on my chest for, like, 2 hours this morning when I was still in bed just reading and you know, catching up on the day's news. So
now that's a good story. That's the kind of thing that keeps him coming back. That's what I wanted to hear. That's good. He found a nice comfort spot on your, what you described recently as, a conclave chest.
Yes, exactly. Conclave, concave, who gives a bleep? We have more Bears audio, including the highest ticket item was Robert Quinn. And how he decided to come to Chicago, downright hilarious. Like Nick Foles is like, I had to do this bold, crazy restructure because I believe that Chicago is a great spot for me to be, and I wanted to play in Matt Nagy's system, so I had to give up a bunch of money and restructure and do all of these things. So, like, Nick Foles told his agent to move a mountain to get him to a good place. Robert Quinn's path, Mac, to choosing the Bears, not exactly the same as Jimmy Graham's or Nick Foles's. So you'll hear that coming up. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.